The following talk is offered freely to ensure that no one is ever denied access to these practices and to these teachings. If you feel inspired to make a donation to support this offering, you can go to my website at jonathanfaust.com. While you're there, you can also sign up for a monthly newsletter designed to support you in your practice. Thank you, and enjoy.
Namaste. Good evening. It's such a beautiful day out there, and it's such a meat locker in here. Have you noticed? You get to play the contrast here. An American businessman was on vacation in Spain and traveling and walking around, and he sees a man hanging out under a tree looking over a sheep, and he initiates a conversation. And he says, "Are these your sheep?" He said, "Yes, yeah, these are mine." And he said, "Is this land yours?" He said, "Yes, it's been in my family for many, many generations." He said, "Well, what do you like to do?" He said, "Well, I just love being on the land and taking care of my sheep. And on Friday and Saturday night, I like to walk in the town with my wife, and I play guitar for my friends at the bar." And the American businessman says, "You know, you could really make this into something." And he says, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "Well, you could get more sheep, and you could build your own slaughterhouse, and then you could export the meat maybe to Europe, and then buy more land and make a lot of money." And the shepherd said, "Well, then what?" And we said, "Well, then you could just retire." He said, "Well, then what I would do? Then what I would do?" He said, "Well, you could just be in your land and watch your sheep, and maybe on weekends go and play guitar on the weekends with your wife." I like that story because we're such doers, you know, in this culture, and we can so easily take that doing into our practice. And there's skillful effort, there's wise effort, but sometimes the doing can get a little bit overdone, you know? So you've been doing a lot, and you've also been doing a fair bit of being as well, particularly if you've been sitting on the rocking chairs or walking by. It's like flashing forward to Shady Oaks retirement community. it's such a zone out there. It's really, I find myself walking and suddenly I'm like, it's like that story of an old man sitting on the porch, and someone says, "What do you do all day?" And he says, "Well, sometimes I sit and think, and sometimes I just sit." That's kind of what this talk is about. This talk is about your relationship to awareness. And you may have done this little practice before, but this little 30-second practice is kind of the foundation of the talk. So if you like, you can close your eyes. And for the next 30 seconds, try not to be aware. Any winners? It's an interesting thing. Whatever you're doing, awareness is there. We can't not be aware. So I'd like to talk a little bit about how we are with awareness specifically, what happens when you are so steeped bringing awareness into your body? And what happens when you practice being aware of your mind? And then what happens when you explore being aware when you're allowing and non-doing? And finally, a little bit on what happens when awareness is aware of itself. The other day I was out for a walk and I came back and I caught a glimpse of myself in the door and I didn't recognize myself. I don't know if you've ever had that experience before. When you look in the mirror, as Jack Kornfield has said, the first thing you may notice is you're getting older. But it's interesting how when you look in the mirror and you think about a time when you looked in the mirror when you were 6 years old, have you changed? The body, the form has certainly changed over those years, but what about the awareness? Has the awareness changed? So we're guided in this practice to bring that awareness as intimately and as deeply as we can into this embodied experience. And there are a couple things that you may begin to notice as you again and again relax and pay attention and relax and pay attention. And the Buddha pointed these out as the three characteristics of reality that become more and more clear in embodied awareness. So I'd like to review these briefly, and we'll do it in an embodied way. So if you like, you can again close your eyes. And it might be interesting for this short practice to let your attention open to the sounds. You might notice how the mind automatically labels the sounds, senses their location. And you might sense if it's possible to relax in such a way that you can actually feel the sound vibrations. One thing you may notice, one characteristic of your experience, is that these sounds are not permanent. That there is a flow, a stream of sound and sound vibration. And you may notice as well that there's kind of a relationship to sound. There may be sounds that you enjoy, that you might want to hang on to. Maybe some sounds that are unpleasant that you would like to kind of move along. And you may notice as well, as you tune in to the sound vibrations, that it's not personal. They're just happening. They're just phenomena passing through. And you might sense it just for a moment as who you are, as the one who is aware. This quality of spacious allowing. And then if you like, you can deepen your breath, and if you like, you can open your eyes. In many ways, this practice is a practice of remembering. And remembering this quality of anicca, of impermanence, that anything born of causes and conditions is subject to change. So when you bring awareness into your embodied experience, there's this recognition of the flow, the stream of phenomena that are passing through. The next element you may notice, the second characteristic of reality, is dukkha, that there is a quality of dissatisfaction. There can be a quality of stress in relationship to what you are experiencing. If there are any preferences whatsoever, there to that degree, there will be some form of dissatisfaction or stress. Anything you try to hold on to that's changing, anything that you try and move on faster than it's changing, will have some quality of dissatisfaction. And the third quality that you notice is this quality of anatta, sometimes referred as not self. That you begin to recognize that much of this phenomena is deeply impersonal. And it points toward a real question of who are you as the one who is aware? What is awareness? So remembering this can be so helpful. It's foundational to our practice. And so we're invited back again to this home base of the body. But of course, the body is intimately linked to the mind. So we explore what it means to be aware in this field of thought. So 1 week ago, not making this up, I was on the roof of a mid-sized delivery truck. You know, the kind with the cab and the big box on the back. And in the skylight of the cab, I could see a friend of mine from the ashram who I've known for years, Mark Kelso, who's a wonderful guy, musician, wonderful citizen of the earth. But there was something horribly wrong with him. It was like he had some drug. He seemed kind of like zombie-like. I could see this hunger in his eyes, like a vacancy in his eyes. And as soon as he saw me, he started to try to crawl through the skylight. Again, I'm not making this up. And the truck started to back up toward the loading dock, and I was frantically trying to break a limb off this tree so I could beat Mark, who was coming after me. And the truck was slowing down. I was trying to decide if I was going to jump off the truck or if I had to stand and fight my friend for so many years. And then I woke up. Have you noticed this week that your mind is not the most reliable refuge in the world? Have you noticed how shameless it is? That there's nowhere it won't go, no thought it won't think, no piece of detail it won't sift through. And Tara's uses a beautiful language of asking yourself from time to time, am I dreaming? And when we bring awareness or mindfulness or non-judging awareness, or however you language it, in to really examine the nature of the mind, there's a lot to discern here. How many times this week has your mind just served up some amazing memories or incredible fantasies? There's a beautiful kind of like analogy of what it's like to sit with this intention just to be aware of thought. And the analogy is you're standing on a street corner, and your job is just to notice the cars as they go by. And so there's some periods where Ford Escape, Chevy Silverado, Volkswagen Cabrio, oh, a 64 Chevy Fleetside pickup truck, just like the one I had in college. Oh, man, I love that car. It's amazing. There was that problem with the differential, though, but I did figure that out eventually. And meanwhile, 40 more cars have gone by. So working with thoughts, of course, becomes an integral part of our practice. And it can be interesting to, as you slow down, we tend to kind of fixate on the thoughts themselves. Sometimes it's possible to sense the space between the thoughts. Certainly sometimes it's just machine gun fire thinking. Sometimes there may be a little more space. Just as when you're listening to music, feel the space between the notes. Or when you're appreciating art, to sense the negative space inside the images. Sometimes it's possible when you find yourself, for example, lost in some craving, to sense if it's possible to track, to trace back what happened before that thought. And you might notice maybe there's some unpleasant, some disturbance, and you mentally moved off into a particular thought form. One of the elements of practice is that you begin to recognize the categories of thoughts. The more you cultivate this sense of non-judging, attentive awareness, you realize that there are categories of thoughts that fall under aversion, anger, judgment, blame, ill will. There are certain thoughts that fall under the category of wanting and craving and planning and fantasy. There are certain thoughts that fall into the category of anxiety and worry and restlessness. The thoughts that have to do with sloth and torpor, of numbing, of cycling down into a depressive place. All the thoughts that are associated with doubt, with the ruthless critic. These begin to become more aware. The recognition of thought patterns. Perhaps you've been aware of, by now, of your top five. Just the top five stories that just kind of cue themselves up and play themselves through. The awareness of thought is in many ways the most profound, recognizing thinking. And of course, one important element of our practice is just to notice the process of thinking. It can allow a little bit of disassociation, allow kind of a coming home again. And sometimes it can be interesting to explore the thoughts themselves. A very powerful question when you find yourself really entrenched in a persistent thought or a persistent story is to ask yourself, what story am I believing right now? It can become, at times, a source of very powerful investigation. Because if you think the same thought again and again and again and again and again, it will calcify. It'll harden as a belief. And if you can recognize a belief, there are some interesting ways that may help you to deconstruct that. Or someone who found themselves in their practice in a never-ending cycle of obsessive thinking about a relationship with work. She'd started a business with a friend and was working for a while, and then it fell apart. There was self-righteousness, there were accusations, there was anger, there was hurt. There was certainly an understanding on her part that she was not as skillful as she could have been. But there are also wrongs on the other side. The business was failing. The investors were upset. And she had taken the role of COO, and her friend had taken the role of CEO. And she was sitting with this morass of turning mental agitation. So it can be very helpful. Again, not all the time, but sometimes, when you find yourself really spinning, to ask yourself, what am I believing? What's the core belief here? And for her, when she really got down into it, take some drilling. For her, the core belief was, I'm flawed. there is something, I'm not good enough. I'm just not good enough. There are a number of ways that you can work with thoughts to examine them. Some beautiful questions articulated beautifully by Byron Katie. To turn your attention to that belief and ask yourself, is it true? Second question quite often is it really true? Because the first answer is, well, yes, because I'm believing it. But to be really rigorous, do you absolutely know beyond a shadow of a doubt that that belief is true? And she felt a little crack. She didn't absolutely know that. But at the same time, even though she intellectually knew it wasn't absolutely true, there were certainly times when she believed it. And then we can move into the investigation, which again is an invitation inside. And for her, when she explored that belief, that when I really believe that I'm flawed and that there's something wrong, she could feel just a tightness and a crushing and a smallness. And as she made room for it, the resentment, memories of being the younger sibling with older siblings who were not very kind to her. And she, again, tried to hold that in loving presence and felt a little more space, a little more empathy. But it's so important to recognize the relationship between your thoughts and how they live on the inside. And for her, the recognition of I'm flawed was something that went way, way back. Holding that with some empathy and kindness was helpful, a bit of a shift. But there's another question you can ask. It's the samurai sword. And she asked herself this question. Who am I without that thought? Staying with that question, she felt the world lift. She felt an expansiveness. She felt like I'm me. She felt this surge of positivity, a surge of possibility, and a real sense of spaciousness. That wasn't a permanent shift. All the lights didn't come on, angels didn't appear, and everything was all better. But it was a glimpse. And this is what our practice can do when we turn our attention toward awareness itself. We can get glimpses. To get a glimpse of who you are without that core belief that cuts you off from your vitality can be extraordinarily helpful. So as we sit, there can be a recognition that not every thought you think is necessarily true. For me, every time I sit on retreat, that awareness comes fresh. I don't have to believe every thought. And just as you realize that awareness isn't sad, it's aware of sadness, the same goes for your thoughts. You don't have to identify with them. You can observe them. You can watch them. When we can step back from that thinking process, new possibilities arise. And this is one of the great, powerful things in meditation. Back in college, I co-managed a large farm and lots of big, complicated machinery. And I was doing transcendental meditation back then. I was working on a piece of equipment, and it just wasn't making sense. It was pulleys and belts. And at one point, I was so frustrated, I kicked the tires of the tractor. And I realized it was my meditation time. So I stepped away. I did my 20 minutes of mantra back then. I came back. It took me 3 minutes to figure out what the problem was. that pause, that stepping back can refresh us in so many amazing ways. We're less identified with the thinking process. So then the question becomes, we can be aware of the body and be aware of these characteristics of impermanence, of our relationship to change, this perception of self. We can be aware of our thinking process, and we can begin to be less identified with thought. We can explore strategic ways of investigating what we're thinking. We can investigate belief. And then we can explore other techniques that can help you to open in different ways in perception. And Tara slipped one of these into meditation the other day. And this particular question or inquiry has been tremendously powerful for me. And I'll lead a little experience. But first, I wanted to share a little story about how I work this particular question. The question she asked was, what is there when there's nothing to do and no problem to solve? Of course, the mind is a constant problem solver. So this particular question, it just so resonated for me. And we went to the Forest Refuge for an annual retreat for 10 days. And it was in February, which is a wonderful time to go to the Forest Refuge because no one dares go to the Forest Refuge in February. It's so cold. So there were just a handful of us. And it was a particularly brutal winter. It was dropping well below zero. And so I was exploring this particular question. You know, what is there inside when there's no problem to be solved? And I found for myself that it sort of like opened up a sense of relief at certain times and a certain kind of anxiety. Well, who am I if there are no problems to solve? What am I going to do? And a certain kind of spaciousness. But a greater sense of ease began to kind of fill my experience. I got a call from the person house sitting saying, you know, the water pressure is really low in the house and I'm not sure why. And so we were trying to figure that out. And, of course, the Forest Refuge is all in silence, so I would have to go out to the car and sit in the freezing car at 10 below to try and figure this out and checking the gauges. And finally, I called a plumber. And then I got a text that I needed to talk to the plumber. And this was 10 o'clock at night, so I had to go out to the parking lot where it was about 15, must have been 15 below, sitting in my car. And the plumber said, I hope you're sitting down. Said, you got two busted pipes. It's Niagara Falls out there. And I estimate it's about 17.5 to fix this. I said, 17.5? Goes, $17,500. And I immediately went to, what is there inside if this is not a problem to be solved? It was actually really quite a profound experience because this was just something to be met. It didn't have to have a story. It sort of just removed the whole drama and allowed me to just meet what needed to be met. Arf van der Loo's little reading, A Short Course in Zen. The mystery of life is not a problem to be solved, but a reality to be experienced. So I'd like to offer this inquiry for you. If you like, you can close your eyes. You might take a moment to sense the breath. Sensing the body, the natural movement of the mind. And for the next minute or so, just noting the experience this question opens up for you. What is there inside right now when there is nothing to do and no problem to solve? You may have found that question to be absolutely ineffective, or you may have had a glimpse, just a moment of resting back and opening to the flow of the present moment. There's an element of our practice that is about the wise effort of doing. That's what we've been doing for countless hours. It's like training a puppy. Say, sit. The puppy has no idea what you're talking about. Push your little bottom to the ground. You say, sit. Looks at you adoringly. Runs off. With patience and persistence, the puppy begins to sit for longer and longer periods of time. And you may have noted that. A little more capacity to stay present. Maybe a little more continuity. A few moments of presence kind of collecting themselves. It's a wonderful thing. And one of the interesting things that occurs when you can sit for longer and longer periods of time is that something arises. Some traditions call it the witness. Sometimes they're referred to as the one who knows, or non-preferential awareness. And arising from there, you begin to recognize in the body and in the mind the flow of your experience, the stream of sensations and thought forms and feelings and different states of consciousness coming and going from this standpoint of open, non-preferential awareness. You begin to notice in more and more subtle detail not only what's happening as it's happening, but how you're relating to it. A little more aware of the attitude in your mind toward the subtle play of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral that naturally arises from the inside. And you start to become more aware of that something that is more aware. You begin to see the difference between being angry and being with your anger. Recognizing that awareness isn't sad, but it's aware of sadness. And noticing that you can't not be aware. You might notice, too, how you can narrow your awareness down like a laser and focus your attention in powerful ways to really rivet your attention on the movement of the breath or that the nanosecond vibration of sound. And you can open your awareness up, as you did this afternoon, of being aware of the space in the body and the space outside the body, the space in the sky. Awareness has the capacity to enter inside the smallest atomic particle and be infinite space itself. That is what you are attuning to in your practice. And so when you can at times strategically and skillfully suspend the doing and open it to being, you begin to access this quality of awareness. Many, many years ago, I was on retreat. And I was working on concentration. So I was just remember the breath. Remember the breath. And so that was a couple days. I was getting a little frustrated. And then I thought, forget the breath. And then I let the breath go. And then there was this kind of wide open space where dropped the anchor, and there was just a sense of just being. All doing fell away, a spaciousness, a kind of a sense of flow, a real taste of that non-preferential awareness, just a sense of really kind of arriving in this sort of spacious, allowing place. It was wonderful. And then it changed. And then I really wanted it back. So then I was thinking, remember to forget the breath. Remember to forget the breath. It's crazy where the mind goes. So as we continue our practice, and as you explore more and more what it's like to arrive, to establish that sense of presence, and then to let it fall away, at times there are glimpses. Sometimes the mind comes right back in. It's a natural part of the process. But I love that our species is referred, it's not Homo sapiens. It's Homo sapiens sapiens. We actually have the capacity to be aware that we are aware. When I heard that, it kind of blew my mind. It kind of blew my mind that a bunch of people sat around and decided that's what we are. That's quite a conversation. So part of the question becomes, what are some of the skillful ways that you can explore what it's like to rest in awareness, to point back toward that quality of presence that can be so hard to access? There's a particular analogy that I found really helpful. Back to the meat locker here. When you go to a movie theater, there's a big screen, and there's moving pictures. And as you watch the movie, of course, you get pulled into the story. You know, you can sob and you can laugh and you can feel terrified. And it's very easy to get lost in the story and the drama of that screen. And of course, what we forget, and it's sort of a willing, you know, the willing suspension of disbelief. You know, we're sort of like, okay, I'm going to turn myself over. I love that definition that entertainment is paying someone to run your mind, which is kind of what a movie is. But you get lost in it. And we forget that image, that flowing image we see is actually a collection of stills. And there are 24 stills per second that are moving at a rapid pace and creating this sense of movement that utterly calls us in. Sometimes we can actually turn our attention from the movie screen and look back and you'll see that white flickering light. In that same way, that's kind of like looking back at the source, looking back toward the light itself. And the question becomes, all right, how do we do that? I'd like to share just a few ways that might help to just get a glimpse of that. One of the most important things is to, again, when you explore this quality of non-preferential awareness, when you explore this inquiry of the one who knows, we have to ask ourselves, well, where is awareness? So, short inquiry, if you like, you can close your eyes. And when you sense the aliveness of sound and feeling, when you notice the flow of thought forms or moods, and when you take the seat of the observer or the witness, and for the next minute, exploring the following question: where is that awareness? Can you locate it? So what happens when you try to locate awareness? Of course, this is a question that has been carried for many, many generations of our species. Is awareness in the mind? Is it in the heart? Is it in the belly? We're more aware of the enteric nervous system, the whole gut feel and how that informs the mind. We're aware of the senses and how the brain is really the computer that makes sense of it and creates a narrative for us to kind of keep it all rolling. But where is that awareness? Is awareness local or is it non-local? Sri Nisargadatta, a wonderful non-dual teacher, offers some words. And it might be helpful to, if you like, to close your eyes. So a few paragraphs. And this is a practice that is in contrast with effort, where he says, it has nothing to do with effort. Look between the thoughts rather than at the thoughts. When you happen to walk in a crowd, you do not fight every person you meet. You just find your way between. When you fight, you invite a fight. But when you do not resist, you meet no resistance. When you refuse to play the game, you are out of the game. As you watch the mind, you discover yourself as the watcher. When you stand motionless, only watching, you discover yourself as the light behind the watcher. The source of light is the unknown source of knowledge. Go back to that source and abide there. I'd like to say that this inquiry can be maddening. And if it's driving you nuts, feel free to ignore it. Because the mind has to be kind of in the right place for it. We're sort of training the mind to reflect beyond the mind. Very, very challenging. I once did a very intensive retreat where we were in dyads. And it was one question, 18 hours a day for 3 days. Please tell me who you are. So when I was first asked the question, I, you know, kind of told my story. And then I listened to the other person. And then back again, I realized pretty quickly I was getting really bored with myself. It had nothing to do with the degree of boredom I had toward everyone else I was listening to. And yet, over time, it began to sense that there is something beyond what the rational mind can reach. And we might just think of it as the mystery. But here's an interesting exercise that can be helpful. So what you want to do is identify one object near you and then point at it with your finger right about here in front of your face. So pick out one object and you're pointing at it. And now look at the color and look at the shape and look at the boundary of it. And now select another item nearby and turn to point. And again, look carefully and identify the color, the shape, and the boundary. And then again, another object. Identify the boundary, the shape, the color. And now turn the finger back toward yourself. And what do you see? And then if you like, close your eyes. There is no color. There is no space. There are no boundaries. Empty. Clear. Awake. If you like, take a moment and rest. Another practice, if you wish, that points toward this quality of presence. With your eyes closed, again, let your attention open to the sound vibrations around you. Notice the sounds that are the closest to you. And the sounds that are at the very edge of your capacity to hear. Exploring this question. Can you feel or imagine the silence that holds all these sounds? Another inquiry. Can you feel the space inside your lungs as you breathe? Can you feel or imagine the space between your breastbone and your spine? Is it possible to feel or imagine the space inside your body? Is it possible to feel or imagine the space outside your body? Is it possible to imagine the space inside your body and the space outside your body as one vast, continuous space? Letting this fall away. And reflecting on these following words from Valerie Larbaud, there is something inside myself, in the depths of myself, in the center of me, something infinitely arid, such as the summit of high mountains, something comparable to the blind spot of the retina. And without echo, that yet sees and hears, a being with a life of its own, who nevertheless lives my life and listens impassively to all the chatter of my consciousness. A being made of nothingness, if this is possible, insensible to my physical sufferings, that doesn't cry when I cry, that doesn't laugh when I laugh, that doesn't blush when I do something shameful. And wherever I go, I always meet this, outside myself as well as within, the irreplaceable emptiness, the unconquerable nothing. So if you like, you can deepen your breath and you can open your eyes. Last night, Pat spoke of equanimity, of this flower of practice, the capacity to be with anything and everything that arises. And as your practice deepens, becomes a very intuitive practice to sense, what is it that calls you? Are you called to more deeply embody into the here and now through the senses, to gather your attention? You may find that that cultivates a powerful presence. You may find at times it's helpful to reflect on that one who knows, of your capacity to be aware of the stream and the flow of your experience. And there may be times when you might drop all effort, drop all doing, and allow yourself to rest back, just to sense and feel, and to sense the mystery of this amazing journey that we're on together. I'd like to close with one more reading. As we have been sharing this journey together. We've been alone together. I'm reflecting on the following words. It only takes a reminder to breathe, a moment to be still. And just like that, something in me settles and softens, makes space for imperfection. The harsh voice of judgment drops to a whisper, and I remember again that life is not a relay race, that we will all cross the finish line, that waking up to life is what we were born for. As many times as I forget, catch myself charging forward without even knowing where I'm going, that many times I can make the choice to stop, to breathe and be, and walk slowly into the mystery. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.